Lee Raymond ruled over ExxonMobil in the manner of an emir. During the difficult years of restructuring, he had worked very closely on the management committee with two key aides. Harry Longwell, a garrulous southerner, ran the upstream. René de Haan, the Moroccan-born Dutchman, supervised the downstream operations. De Haan might have been a candidate to succeed Raymond, although he was a little on the older side of the ideal age range. In any event, he decided to retire early and return to Europe in 2002. Longwell was essentially Raymond's age, too old to be considered as his successor. By the time the Saudi deal fell apart, Raymond was approaching 65, but showed no interest in retirement. Increasingly, the outside members of the corporation's board of directors regarded the lack of a clear succession plan with concern. Hardly anyone at ExxonMobil stayed on beyond retirement age. Lawrence Rawl, Raymond's predecessor, had retired at 64. "He wanted to stay longer," a director remembered. "The board was a little uncomfortable with it." Earlier in 2001, after the dust settled from the absorption of Mobil, the board had come to a fairly clear view that, because of the merger, the people who were likely to succeed Lee were not in position, recalled an executive involved, because these younger candidates were still out leading operating divisions and had not spent enough time at headquarters or interacting with the outside corporate directors who would be responsible for the final choice. A successor needed to be in his early 50s to have a chance to lead the company for an extended time. There were no women anywhere near in contention for the top job at ExxonMobil. Younger candidates should have been brought in much, much earlier to sit around the table, the executive who watched the succession process recalled. But Raymond argued that he needed to keep the most talented younger leaders out in the field to make sure that the reorganization following the Mobil merger took place properly. The rationale was that we'd lost 2 years in developing successors because of the merger. The board had therefore agreed to extend Raymond's tenure beyond his scheduled retirement in 2003. At the same time, the directors told him, in essence, "We need to bring these people in." Raymond named two promising younger candidates, Rex Tillerson and Edward G. Galante, to co-equal jobs at headquarters. Tillerson was a Texan who had spent much of his Exxon career in the upstream exploration division. Galante was a New Yorker who had risen on the downstream side. That seemed to give Tillerson a built-in advantage, because at ExxonMobil, as a director put it, "real men, they discover oil." A few members of the board felt, as the director recalled, "there was just no question that Rex was going to be the successor. He'd run the Russian project. He came from the discovery side." Yet Raymond had spent time during his rise running downstream facilities and was not an oil deal hunter by specialty. Other Exxon chiefs before him had also emerged mainly from downstream careers, including Cliff Garvin, Exxon's 14th chief executive. Raymond was the 16th. In years past, the profitability of the upstream had subsidized downstream operations, which often struggled to break even or eke out modest returns. Raymond had insisted that the downstream businesses had to stand on their own. Galante had been part of this successful transformation. Still, not everyone on the board of directors thought the contest Raymond had set up was a genuine one. They assumed Tillerson would prevail, largely because of his command of the big oil and gas portfolios abroad, and they questioned Raymond's motivations. "My concern was that it was kind of a charade to buy him, Raymond, more time," a director said. Once a year, on a Tuesday afternoon in October, Raymond organized a special meeting of the board. At this session, Raymond was the only ExxonMobil executive in attendance. Raymond provided reviews to the outside directors of the performance and potential of his most senior executives. "It was always the case that the possible successors were not ready yet," an executive who heard Raymond's briefings recalled. Raymond would tell the board, "Maybe in 18 months or 2 years." The directors would talk amongst themselves. This could go on forever. They made several efforts to raise the matter with Raymond, and they were rebuffed. On paper, Raymond worked for the board. In practice, he controlled his directors carefully. "The board wasn't able to impact management very effectively," a director recalled. They were a group unwilling to challenge the status quo. That is one of the few boards I know where the whole is less than the sum of the parts. There was very little free-flowing discussion at board meetings. Raymond's remarks, presentations by other senior executives, and votes on board resolutions were written down well in advance and read out from sheets of paper. Board committee meetings could be a little looser. Even there, ExxonMobil executives listened carefully if outside directors asked hard or challenging questions and reported back to Raymond. The offending director would soon be smothered with attention to deflect the concerns he had raised. Once, after a director spoke up to defend one of Raymond's policies during a committee meeting where Raymond was not present, the chairman approached him to say, "I'm really glad you spoke up in that committee." The director was taken aback. I was just amazed that he had that kind of intelligence. It was very revealing to me. The approach was a throwback to the way board meetings often had been run in corporate America during the 1960s and 1970s. As oil prices rose, the corporation's financial and operating performance was so strong that there were few big issues that the directors felt they needed to intervene about. That was a little bit of the board's problem, an executive recalled. The company was so successful, it was kind of hard to argue. There was a little bit of a prisoner's dilemma. On the question of Lee Raymond's successor, about all the board could accomplish was to push the chief executive to bring Tillerson and Galante to more board meetings to show off their skills to the directors. They each made presentations at the board's retreat in Scotland in June 2003, in the midst of Raymond's intensifying, failing negotiations with the Saudis. Gradually, board members got to know the pair better. The formal presentations they made during meetings were heavily scripted and revealed little, but afterward, at lunches and dinners, the two would sit with outside directors and engage in more informal banter. Also, the corporation periodically organized board field trips to ExxonMobil divisions or operating sites, travel that also allowed Tillerson and Galante to interact with directors spontaneously. At the personnel review sessions with the board each October, however, Raymond's message did not change. We need more time to see them perform.